You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
A Symantec study prompts a question. We know there's an attacker's advantage, but could there be a counter-attacker's advantage too? Juche may not extend to the internet, at least for Pyongyang's leaders. Iran's copy kitten is characterized as unsophisticated but nonetheless effective. Mac users are awakened by fruit fly, and the FBI is investigating. Adobe tells us to begin saying goodbye to Flash. And some notes from Vegas, because what goes on in Vegas does not stay there. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, July 26, 2017. We've often heard about the attacker's advantage in cyberspace. The conventional wisdom, and it's well-founded wisdom, is that the cyber attackers have the advantage. They only need one good attempt for success. All their failures matter not a bit, at least not as much. But the defenders, you have to get it right all the time. One failure, and that attacker's in, and probably out, before you know it. So here's some food for thought that may serve to put the usual threat news into perspective. Symantec has taken a look at some prominent advanced persistent threat groups and found that their tools tend to be buggy. The security firm quietly suggests this could be turned to the defender's advantage. Consider it the counterattacker's advantage, and remember, as any graduate of the Leavenworth short course would tell you, that a counterattack is a defensive operation. There's no suggestion here of hacking back or of cybermark and reprisal. North Korea is famously isolated, but what about its rulers? They're about as connected as anyone else, according to a recorded future study. Pyongyang's elite are assiduous users of Facebook, YouTube, and Amazon, to pick just three attractive Western services. Perhaps because they wish to maintain situational awareness of imperialist atrocities, although on reflection one is reluctantly moved to skepticism. It seems they like cat videos and next-day delivery as much as the inherently evil American or rapacious Japanese plunderer. Who knew? This seems inconsistent with the Juche spirit of collective solidarity and self-reliance, but it may provide some insight useful to any elements of the civilized world interested in countervalue targeting in cyberspace. Also in the study are some interesting observations about North Korea's use of foreign networks, sourced by Recorded Future to research done by Team Simru. Chinese and Indian networks are most commonly exploited by Pyongyang's mix of espionage and criminal operators. They also use networks in Kenya, Indonesia, Mozambique, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Various looks at Iran's copy kitten operators are reaching a consensus that they're not highly skilled, but that they've been effective at espionage nonetheless. Clear Sky and Trend Micro report that Copy Kitten's Wilted Tulip campaign has successfully exfiltrated data from a range of regional, European, and North American targets. The fruit fly malware found to have been infesting Apple products is an odd one. Mac Rumors calls it old and possibly abandoned, but the FBI is investigating. Fruit fly is, or was, essentially criminal spyware. Adobe has announced that it will finally retire Flash. The software has been an important part of the Internet for two decades, although its second decade has been marked by an unwanted role as an often exploited attack surface. But now we can all begin our goodbyes, although they'll be long goodbyes. Adobe has scheduled Flash's final retirement for 2020. When it comes to securing ICS and critical infrastructure, one of the challenges is communicating securely with devices that are physically spread out. One company working on tackling that problem is Full Spectrum, a provider of private licensed wireless broadband networks. Stuart Cantor is CEO of Full Spectrum.
It's not just the electric grid, it's pipelines, water pipelines, wastewater, oil. And so you have all this infrastructure out there that needs to be managed. Historically, it was managed over these dedicated phone lines. And now you have the capability to do pervasive computing, very low-cost devices at the grid edge or any infrastructure edge. And how do you communicate with that device and collect the information in a secure way? One easy way would be, well, let's just go wherever there's cellular coverage, let's just go get some cellular modems and we'll throw it on the public internet and then we'll have access. And so that's what's introducing some of these vulnerabilities to the various networks, because most likely it'll have a public IP address, or it's the source is a public IP address that's being converted to a local address. You're now depending on the infrastructure of these large companies that are vulnerable to all sorts of attacks. Our customers are large electric utility companies using our equipment to create their own private wireless internet over very large areas.
And so just from a security point of view, when you're dealing with radio signals with RF, what's to keep someone from tossing up a mast antenna and intercepting communications or jamming them or, you know, trying to insert their own data into the line?
Correct. So there are vulnerabilities there in all the technologies. So in our aspect, you know, we do encryption over the air. They also do VPN. So there's multiple layers on the air interface protocol. We have the capability, we're what they call software-defined radio technology, and the construction of even the data frame is unique to the customer. So it makes the ability to hack a system very, very difficult. Our customers are using frequencies that were legacy paging frequencies, legacy television frequencies, things that have been abandoned over time. And with our technology, we repurpose those licensed frequencies for them, where they own, operate, and control the frequency. So, for example, if they find that their signal is being compromised in a certain area, the FCC is responsible to go out and find that interference and shut it down. There's a layer of even enforceability from the government. And then we also have other capabilities in how we dedicate traffic uplink and downlink. So there's a whole host of designs that can be implemented over the network that allow layers of redundancy and security.
That's Stuart Cantor from Full Spectrum. Keynotes at B-Sides yesterday in Las Vegas highlighted calls for true multidisciplinary cooperation on the very large-scale problems we face in cybersecurity. The disciplines that could make a major difference would prominently include economics, behavioral sciences, and machine learning. Endgame gave an interesting talk, Destructive Malware and Interstate Rivalries, The Evolution of Digital Weapons and Geopolitical Conflict. Andrea Little-Limbago and Mark Dufresne gave attack timelines and details of destructive attacks, with an emphasis on the destructive as opposed to the merely intrusive, from Stuxnet to recent attacks centered on but extending beyond Ukraine. Limbago put the incidents into geopolitical context by describing the various rivalries that created the conditions for the attacks, a smart pairing of the political and the technical. In general, the atmosphere at B-Sides has been easygoing. It's free, the teachers are volunteers, and the attendees struck our stringer as passionate people who care about security and at the same time like to have fun. Therefore, we had a chat with the B-Sides bartender. She told our stringer that the most commonly chosen morning beverage so far has been beer, followed by Jägermeister. Our sociological desk suggests this means one thing: young crowd, college drinking habits. Around 10:30 local time, the first Jack and Coke was ordered up. Being Jack and Coke and not vodka and cucumber suggests that the demographic is more American than Russian. So cheers, B-Sides, and be sure you designate a driver or hire a Lyft or Uber or a taxi.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Jonathan Katz. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Maryland and also director of the Maryland Cybersecurity Center. Jonathan, welcome back. We saw a story from Wired magazine. It was talking about some physicists trying to do some work with quantum cryptography. They were using lasers in an airplane. Before we get to that part of the story, can you just give us an overview about quantum cryptography?
Sure. So I think most of the cryptography we're familiar with is classical cryptography, where you're doing classical computation on classical information. And quantum cryptography is really interesting because it uses the fundamental laws of quantum mechanics in order to build a protocol. And what's particularly interesting there is that it's possible to build protocols that you can prove unconditionally are secure against any possible attacker, quantum or not. So people are very excited about using what's called quantum key distribution to allow two parties to set up a key remotely, much like we do now when we do key exchange when setting up an SSL or a TLS connection. And people are excited about the possibility of maybe doing that with quantum mechanics and getting an invulnerable system for sharing keys.
And this is that situation in physics where the measurement of the key actually changes the key?
Yeah, so basically the way that you can prove security of the protocol is by arguing that if an attacker interferes with the channel in any way, then that interference would be detected by one of the parties. And so that's something that fundamentally is different from what you have in classical communication, where in theory an attacker could read all the bits going across the channel and neither side can even tell that the attacker is there.
So what's going on with this story in particular? Why did they have to use lasers in an airplane to do their tests?
Well, so because it's based on quantum mechanics, you need some quantum mechanical particle, essentially, that can act as a means of communication in the protocol. And one of the most popular ways of trying to implement that is using photons, which of course means light, which brings us to the lasers that you mentioned earlier. Mm. So what these people were trying to demonstrate is how far apart the two parties could be while running the protocol. And so they were using a laser, and they were having one person stand on the ground and another person flying around in the air to try to get a larger distance between them. Right, of course, the challenge is you want something where the people are far apart, but yet they can see each other in a straight line. And if they're too far apart, but they're both on the Earth, then the curvature of the Earth will make them not be able to see each other by a straight line. But if one of them is flying in the air, they can get quite far away and still be in line of sight of the person on the ground.
So that's one of the challenges of this type of cryptography, is being able to use it at a distance.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, for one thing, it's very sensitive to noise. And so you need to be able to send these photons from one party to the other over a large distance without having the signal being corrupted by the noise. And so currently the distance over which you can run these protocols is relatively small. And it's not yet to the point where you can imagine running this, say, between a user in Los Angeles and a user on the East Coast.
So you can't just send it along, say, like fiber optic cables, that sort of thing.
So people are trying that also, and people are looking at maybe using repeaters along the way to try to increase the distance. But this is still very much research that people are carrying out, and a lot of engineering work as well, to push it to larger and larger distances. But we're not there yet.
All right. Interesting stuff. Jonathan Katz, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.